coming to Alabama to walk the picket line or focus on the strike.
The workers here have felt abandoned, and basically the issue with this strike is that these are a group of multiracial, multigender, rural, blue-collar union workers in Alabama. The Republicans know that they're union, so they don't care about them, and Democrats see them as a lost cause because many of them are conservative. It's a more culturally and politically conservative group of workers, so they think, oh, well, it's not worth our time. But they are. This should have been the biggest labor story in the country for the past 2 years, and it wasn't. And I think that says a lot about the biases and prejudices and partisan nonsense that dictate whose stories get covered and whose don't.
Kim, we just have 20 seconds, but the issue of conversion, moving away from coal, and how workers are included in that discussion.
Yeah, that is a big question for 20 seconds. But one thing I want to mention about these workers specifically, they mine metallurgical coal, which is not involved in the energy economy. It's used to make steel. If we went to a green economy tomorrow, these workers would still be heading down into the pits, and that coal, that met coal, would still be shipped overseas to industrialized countries. It's complicated, but the thing I want to impress listeners with is that we need to look after workers even if we don't like the jobs they're doing. Solidarity means solidarity. And we need to work this out together as we move forward, because we can't afford to leave people behind.
Kim Kelly, want to thank you so much for being with us, independent labor journalist.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
African in the world, that new African is ready to fight his own battle and show that, after all, the black man is capable of managing his own affairs.
Africans don't need Africa. Mutual respect, man and woman. Equal rights and respect for each other. That's what we need. That's what we need. We don't need.
And good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland, with you for the next hour, as I am every Wednesday. A quick reminder, we are in our winter membership drive. And you know what that means? That means that we call upon you for your support at this time. We have a goal of $17,000 until through March 25th. We're doing pretty well, but we need to keep on a decent pace. So we're asking you real quick to go to kboo.fm/give or just kboo.fm and click on the donate button. You can also text KBOO to 44321 or mail your check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. I'll be talking a little bit more as we go along. Today's show is about the Black Alliance for Peace, Anti-Imperialism, and U.S. Politics, with a radical black perspective on the Ukraine war. Founded in April 2017 by a handful of African and black organizations in the United States, with Ajamu Baraka at its helm, the Black Alliance for Peace is attempting to redevelop the black radical tradition's anti-imperialist position. The goal is to help build the African/black left to be strong enough to lead a U.S.-based movement to overturn U.S. imperialism. The organization's founding members agreed to 10 points of unity: the right to self-defense, self-determination, anti-imperialism, working-class foundation, intersectionality, anti-patriarchy, decolonization, prisoner support, black unity, and southern roots. In 2021, BAP's members agreed to add two more principles: anti-capitalism and the black radical peace tradition. Today's guest, Julie Varughese, represents the Black Alliance for Peace's Solidarity Network on the BAP's coordinating committee. We can talk about what the Solidarity Network as we go into the show. Julie is based in Washington, D.C. And good morning, Julie.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Really glad to have you on. I'm looking forward to this discussion. I've been looking for various viewpoints on U.S. imperialism, the, as I said, geopolitics, and specifically the Ukraine war. I've had a number of guests critical of the Ukraine, the U.S. role in the Ukraine war and NATO's role, and we're really glad to have you on. But before we go into you and the Black Alliance for Peace, tell us a little bit about that song. Who did that song? And there's a speaker at the very beginning. Who is that speaker?
That song is by Dee, the Peacemaker. The song starts with a speech by Ghanaian President Kwame Nkrumah. And he's one of the revolutionary leaders in Africa that revolutionary Africans in the United States and around the world look to for ideological leadership, you could say, as kind of like a forefather, one of many people who have led the way to in the struggle for African liberation.
Indeed, and I know this is kind of getting ahead of ourselves away in the program, but the song is called Africans Don't Need AFRICOM. Maybe just briefly explain what that's all about.
AFRICOM is the short version of saying U.S. Africa Command, and U.S. Africa Command is one of 11 military and strategic commands that the United States deploys around the world, and also it has a space command, which means it's not even on Earth anymore. Now the United States is trying to, you could say, colonize the outer space, and so that is what the Black Alliance for Peace sees the United States setting up these military and strategic commands as you could say, like pan-European hubris, and as like as a continuation of the pan-European colonial capitalist project, something that started in its kernel form in 1492 when Columbus set sail and ended up in the West Indies instead of in India itself. And so what the Black Alliance for Peace does is try to really connect that history up, and so it's clear that we're not just struggling against corporations, we're not just struggling against the FBI and the CIA, we're struggling against a pan-European colonial capitalist project that has its start in going back more than 500 years.
Can I ask you, are you by any chance on a speakerphone?
Yes, I am. I can turn it off.
That would be great. It sounds like you're in a tunnel or something.
Oh, okay. Is this better?
Much better. Much better.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Now that we've got that out of the way, tell us a little bit about yourself. How, you know, a little bit maybe just if you feel like it, about your own trajectory as an activist and sort of what led you to joining to the position you're in as co-coordinator of the Solidarity Network, and then we'll explain what the Solidarity Network is.
Regarding myself, I am, I guess you could say, I really became kind of aware of U.S. machinations when 9/11 happened. I was a senior in college and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but when 9/11 happened, it was clear that there was more to the story than simply a bunch of guys on an airplane hijacking it. So I became actually interested in journalism. And then from there, just some years went by, and I ended up working on the Stein Baraka campaign. It was there that I met Adama Baraka, and he asked me to help launch the Black Alliance for Peace. And so I took on that challenge, and that started in 2017. And we've always had non-African supporters for the Black Alliance for Peace, because the Black Alliance for Peace is an African organization. And so we consolidated all of the non-African supporters in 2020 into the Solidarity Network. And I was asked to coordinate that. And now we have me and another person coordinating as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's that.
Well, so what is... Well, there's just a bunch of questions. I guess we'll talk about, so the Black Alliance for Peace started in 2017. Well, just mention, you know, since he's such an important figure in the founding of this, talk a little bit about Ajamu Baraka himself.
Yeah, I mean, Ajamu Baraka has more than five decades of experience in the movement for liberation. He started as a teenager, continued his activism as a U.S. soldier in the military, in the army, and continued after that. He's always been involved in some organization or another, and because that's kind of the traditional way of thinking about this kind of stuff, is that you're always in an organization, whether it's somebody that started it and you're part of that group, or you go off and you start an organization, but you always have to be organizing. That's the tradition that he's from. So he's been organizing in places like Miami, then moved to Atlanta, I believe, in the early 1980s. And then he was there for a number of decades, and he's been in Colombia since 2011, I believe, and he's been there serving in like an advisory role to the movements down there, and aiding as they need. There's a big Afro-Colombian population. It's the third largest African population outside of Africa, and still very much hooked into the work here in the United States that we're doing.
Huh. I hadn't remembered that. I actually tried to get him on the show a number of years ago, and I think it was complicated because of, I think he maybe had been traveling or something. Anyway, because I've read his stuff over the years, I've been really impressed by it, and I had forgotten that, because I had someone on after the amazing election in Colombia, which was extremely heartening that that could actually happen, to really seemingly really tap, you know, the actual grassroots movements and the Afro-Colombian population. So I don't know what he thought of that, what he thinks of how that's going, but maybe I'll try to get him on the show. So you must have through your work with them and, you know, your own self-education, you must have obviously gotten some historical grounding in the Black Peace tradition is one of the latest founding tenets of the Black Alliance for Peace. I've been dipping into it myself, but talk a little bit about, you know, the Black African Americans involved in anti-colonial struggles. You know, obviously it'd be interesting to hear about Ajamu Baraka's experience, because the Blacks were such an important part of the GI war resistance movement during the Vietnam War. There seemed to be a real crossover between Black power and the GI resistance. But maybe just give us a little bit, if you can, about the history, you know, leading up to the Black Alliance for Peace. It's a much older tradition.
I think the first thing I'd like to explain is why the Black Alliance for Peace refers to our people, our members, as African / Black, or referring to people out there as African / Black. It's because we want to, or the Black Alliance for Peace wants to make clear that Black people in the United States are Africans, like they are from Africa. They did not choose to come here. Their ancestors did not choose to come here from Africa. They were taken from over there and forced into labor and genocided. And so if you speak to anybody else in the world, you know, if a Chinese person was born in the United States, or a Chinese person is born in Yugoslavia, or a Chinese person is born in Australia, they are still relating to themselves, or at least people will relate to them as Chinese people, but the same is not the case with Black people in the United States, and so that's why they refer to Africans. And so the thing, though, is that there has been so much confusion with the fact that you know, and General Baraka gets into this about just how integration of schools actually helped expedite the process of Americanizing the African. And so before integration of schools, Black people had their own schools, and granted, they may not have had access to the same resources, the same level of resources that white, predominantly white schools had in the United States, but they had their own schools, they had their own neighborhoods, they had their own teachers, they had their own doctors, and et cetera. And integrating schools actually aided the process of like an ideological breakdown in the African, the Black community in the United States, so that people who are Africans are calling themselves Americans, and they and people in the Black Alliance for Peace who lead the Black Alliance for Peace reject that whole premise that Black people are Americans, or just even the whole idea of being just Black. You know, they consider themselves Africans, and so that's why they use that terminology. So I just wanted to be clear about that for all of your listeners.
So they reject the term African American.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not like explicitly said on our website, but it's something that we are constantly using in our language, in our materials, and so then with the Black radical peace tradition, it goes way back. You know, we can talk about Malcolm X. We can talk about just the whole premise is, like, if you were to boil it down, essentially it's saying, you know, that saying, no justice, no peace. But what does that mean? It literally means that for African people who are in a constant state of war in the United States and around the world, that peace simply cannot mean an absence of military conflict or other kind of conflict. It has to be that it has to actually ensure that the infrastructure, that everything is in place so that people can live fully realized existences, and not as individuals, but collectively. And that's actually something that Ajamu has raised from his time in Colombia, is that he says that the difference that Afro-Colombians in terms of their movement have made, like the distinction that they've made, is that they struggle for collective human rights. They don't struggle for individual human rights, as in the right to own a house or the right to own land. They struggle for collective rights to territory, to health, to education, to just like a full human liberation. And that because they struggle collectively, they are so much more, they are so much stronger. And that's why, even though Colombia is like you could call it like a U.S. vassal, it's essentially just bowing to the United States. Despite, you know, the most recent election, the bottom line is that it still has U.S. military bases there. That's not going to end anytime soon. But despite all of the violence that's occurred in Colombia over the past several decades, because the people are organized as Africans, whether they're Africans, indigenous people, rural people, all kinds of people, because they are organized, they're able to do and accomplish so much more than what people in the United States can do. And a lot of that comes to the mindset or the thinking about things in terms of collective human rights. And so that's basically what this whole Black radical peace tradition is about, is that it's collectively struggling in defense of a world that's completely liberated from global conflict, nuclear armament, proliferation, war and subversion, and against and defeating all of the global systems of oppression like colonialism, imperialism, patriarchy, and white supremacy.
Speaking of the history, I actually looked up on searched for on the internet some articles about the kind of history of African American anti-imperialism, I think is the keywords I used. Anyway, I found an interesting item in 1899, mm-hmm. with a presidential election coming up, a group of Black Bostonians gathered to express their opinions about the U.S. occupation of the Philippines. While whites led most anti-imperialist organizations, many farmers, labor unions, immigrants, and African Americans also opposed the expansion of U.S. military power overseas. Anyway, they had a resolution resolved that the colored people of Boston in meeting assembled here to enter their solemn protest against the present unjustified invasion by American soldiers in the Philippine Islands, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, that coupled with article in the on the Black Agenda report, which noted that there is a, just like in other wars, African and black African people from who are descendants of enslaved Africans here in this country played a major role in the American wars. There's a lot of black troops that were participated in the invasion of the Philippines, but there were also a number, just like there are many more defectors, resistors later on in the Vietnam War. There was a handful, including a guy named, I think, Gil Fagan. Anyway, it's an article. I don't think I included it. I'll have to put it on my website, Black American Anti-Imperialist Fighters in the Philippine-American War. This guy ended up being a actual kind of a leader of the Philippine resistance. This is talking 18, Corporal David Fagan, a black soldier who in November 1899 defected to the Filipino cause. Anyway, this, it's you know, there's also an article I found about, I think it was on the occasion of Muhammad Ali's death and him saying that, you know, he had nothing against the Vietnamese. Anyway, it's hard, you know, as someone who's not close to, and I'm sure most of my listeners are not close enough to the African community, the black community, to know how widespread those feelings are of sort of, you know, identifying with oppressed people in the world and not want to be involved, is because, you know, the American U.S. propaganda is so intense that, you know, most people fall in line with that, you know, consciously or unconsciously. Anyway, I just wanted to flag those things and I guess ask how the Black Alliance for Peace deals with that issue of, you know, how to solidify that identification of oppressed black people here with other, you know, victims of colonialism in the world.
Yeah, you know, what you raise is important because internationalism has been a pretty long-standing tradition of the black radical peace tradition. It's anybody could understand if you know, African people in the United States who are an internal colony, the Black Alliance for Peace and our members and member organizations relate to black people in the United States as an internal colony because of the relationship with the U.S. state, because African people do not have power in this country. There may be a few people here and there who spring up and turn into like an Oprah Winfrey or, you know, a Barack Obama, but those are rare. More than 90% of black people in the United States are poor, and having, you know, heads of state or mayors in cities who are black doesn't eradicate or end the internal colonial existence of black people in the United States. And so because those people are actually loyal to the U.S. state and to the ideology of white supremacist patriarchal capitalism and imperialism. And so one thing that Black Alliance for Peace always says is that we have to be very clear on who our enemies are, and we have to call out people who are loyal to black people's enemies. And so that that's been something that's been part of what we've been saying is the intensifying ideological struggle that's taking place. And I'm sorry, but your question was about the internationalism of black people, of African people in the United States.
Well, just how you know, it's there's a split, you know, probably just about every community has various, you know, fault line splits. You know, there's a split between sort of liberal reformists, you know, the idea of liberal reformism versus more radical or revolutionary change. And that happens in any community. Obviously, also in the Black community, there's others. And I guess so I'm always as a talk show host and a political person, I'm always, and someone who self-identifies, whether I am or not, I guess other people would say, is as a more radical or would-be revolutionary. I don't see much of a revolutionary thrust, right now overall where I am, but, maybe I'm just not part of it. What I see is, like the Fred Hampton Rainbow Coalition to me is still a great model. The idea that people who either both oppressed peoples and people whose consciousness gets them to a place where they understand the systemic nature of how things operate and want to, join and struggle with other people who really want to make, more radical changes, given that it doesn't seem like incrementalism has really had the kind of success that we really need. So I guess the question is, maybe I'm just straying a little too far. So how does the Black Alliance for Peace address that? Do they just, try to get, the various radical factions together? Or what is the reaction to the Black Alliance for Peace? Has it gotten much traction? Has it gotten much pushback? Does it really have a much relevance within the African Black community?
Well, I think I first want to address the idea that you put out there about how every community does have revolutionary threads and reformist threads. That actually is, it's an interesting conversation because, yes, there's always been compradors or people selling people out or communities out from within the community. The thing, though, is that it has been systematized, and it started really in the 1970s after the decimation of the Black Liberation Movement through imprisonments or through assassinations. And what started to appear was Black people coming into power or so-called power in cities as mayors or in Congress, for example, as congresspeople. And that was held up. And just throughout local governments and state governments, lots of Black people emerging, coming into different positions of power or state power, and that was laid out as though a we made it kind of thing. And that started to kind of set the stage for what then happened when Barack Obama began running for office. And actually, the way that a number of people who are thought leaders within the Black radical tradition nowadays, they will say that the originally there was no Black support for Barack Obama. It wasn't until it looked like he could win the majority white vote in the primaries that Black people began to support him en masse. And having Barack Obama in office is what people who write for like Black Agenda Report and are part of the Black is Back Coalition, because there's like a number of different entities within the Black liberation spaces, they say that that started kind of the not the Americanization of Black people, because that really started with the integration of schools, but the acceptance and the willingness to accept U.S. foreign policy and U.S. White supremacist patriarchal capitalism and imperialism, whereas Black people on the whole, for the most part, opposed U.S. foreign interventions. They were always the most militantly anti-war group among all of the different groups that are categorizing the United States, whether you're talking about white people, so-called Hispanic or Latino people, Asian people, you compare them, all of them, to black people, and black people were always significantly more opposed to U.S. foreign intervention. And so having Barack Obama in place it unfortunately made it so that people thought that, well, as long as you have a black face in a high space or a black face in a position of power, that they that's good enough for the struggle of the people. And it is not good enough, because poverty rates among black people continue. The Black Lives Matter movement that started in the streets after Mike Brown was killed started during Barack Obama's term. Black, you know, wealth, you could say, is not any better off as a result of Barack Obama being in office. And so, and to your question about what was your question?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's a good conversation. We got one caller waiting. I just want to put out the number, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. But before we go to James, I just want to remind you that we are in our winter membership drive. It's really, really important. I don't know if this conversation is stretching your thoughts. I hope so. I hope in a good way. I hope this is something that maybe even makes you think a little differently. Maybe makes you want to do a little more research, a little more reading. There's my program page, Wednesday Talk Radio at KBO.FM. There's a few articles that might lead you to some places that you might not have been. And if you've already been there, hopefully this is something that makes you appreciate KBOO for what we do, the different voices we bring you. I bring you this show every week. So go text KBOO to 44321 with your donation of whatever amount it might be. We do appreciate sustaining donors. So it just comes out of your bank account to the extent that you are able every month. Or you can go to kbo.fm and click on donate. This is a listener-sponsored station. This is how we do it. And it's been working for 54 years, and we hope to keep going. So thank you for that. And with that, let's just bring up James. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello?
Hear me?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So here's my thing. Like, I don't know where you guys are at in the conversation. I'm a little late. But the one thing that I really wanted to bring up, because you had just spoken about the Fred Hampton Rainbow Coalition, you know, I think the one thing that, you know, and a lot of listeners really need to understand this, you know, Fred Hampton was a Marxist-Leninist Maoist. So he was doing teachings where he was teaching white people. And the biggest problem that we see right now is that white people don't want to be taught. You know, they seem to think in a lot of ways that they can just love their way. And love is such and love in like the syrupy, saccharine way of loving, not really like facing hard truths. You know, right now we're living in a time where, you know, it's just easier to pretend that it's easier to believe in fairy tales than it is to look at reality with everything going on. You know, if we really want to talk about rainbow coalition building, then we really need to talk about truth telling. And the thing of the matter is that, you know, history has proven more than once that when it comes to telling the truth, that, you know, it's really hard to get white people to listen. You know, there's so many national myths that need to be broken through. They have been broken through at various points, but because of, you know, COINTELPRO and all these other operations that the government has put on to basically purposely regress the revolutionary potential of the masses, you know, it's like literally starting from square one. You know, you can't have a rainbow. And, you know, the thing is like, if you really want to build a rainbow coalition, it's about, like, because what a lot of people are thinking is more like tactical unity, where we just kind of drop all of our preconceived notions about one another for like a couple months to get something done. whereas you're talking about like what we're talking about is revolutionary unity, where people understand their place in history and work from that place and work from that, you know, wherever it is, whether you're part of the oppressors or part of the oppressed. And you know, I get on Abe's show about this too, but you know, a lot of people who, you know, a lot of folks are, you know, they think they're really radicals, but they're radical liberals. They're not really revolutionary, because at the end of the day, you have to understand that it's protracted struggle that we're talking about, which if it goes well, will lead to armed resistance from the state, which means that we have two choices. You know, we either lay open, we lay down and take it, or we pick up arms and fight back. And a lot of folks who are in the oppressor class who want, you know, so-called Rainbow Coalition, don't understand or don't want to see that fact.
Well, I don't think there's too many people in the oppressor class who want something like Fred Hampton's Rainbow Coalition. I can't imagine, but maybe get Julie's response.
Yeah, that actually reminded me of what you were asking about, which was the Rainbow Coalition, and thank you to the caller for bringing that up, because I think that the Rainbow Coalition and the legacy of Fred Hampton is being misrepresented sometimes. It's where it's just this kind of shallow idea of, you know, black people and white people can just unite and get together. And it's, that actually wasn't the case at all. It was white people, or it was really poor white people falling under the leadership of black revolutionaries. They had to essentially be disloyal to the U.S. national project, the U.S. settler colonial project. And to do that is like suicide for white people. And so what the caller brought up was very important, because you know, if you're a white person, a person whose ancestors came from Europe, there's like a national kind of mythology about the start of the United States and people's role here. And as long as you don't have to have white skin, you can be a white person in your mind and without having to be a white person. And that's what the Black Alliance for Peace and other people in the black radical tradition bring up, is that people like Barack Obama were peddling white supremacy despite being black people on the outside. And that in order to, and so this idea of bringing up, of building a rainbow coalition, yeah, it's going to be necessary, but it's going to have to be led by revolutionary Africans if it does happen.
Did you want to say something more, James? I guess James, okay, James is off. Well, before we go to Chuck, yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing that requires, you know, conversations, you know, between people who are actually actively, you know, organizing in the same geographical place, in the same room, and really developing something. You know, we can't, you know, I don't know you, you don't know me. I my experience was more with indigenous people of this land and taking their leadership, which is a whole other question, mm-hmm. an important question. You know, the being involved in the fishing rights struggle here on the what's called the Columbia River, and for protection of sacred sites and whatever. So that was my experience, and I accepted their leadership, and I understand what you're meaning by accepting the leadership of the, you know, of the oppressed people. And I guess I just, the Rainbow Coalition, you know, it was no accident that the white people were poor whites who were, you know, forced to migrate, similar to the way that blacks were forced to out migrate from the South. Not, you know, structurally different, but, you know, from Appalachia, the depredations of the coal fields in Appalachia was just shocking. And so there's no accident that those people understood the nature, you know, the people who were able to get it, you know, most people are forced to just basically get, you know, get along, go along to get along. You know, that's the nature of the capitalist system. So, you know, we can't blame people for that. But anyway, so yeah, you had an organization of poor whites from Appalachia there in Chicago, and then you had the brown berets, right, and the Black Panthers. I don't know how much indigenous involvement there was. That would have been interesting to see how it would have developed if he had been able to live. But anyway, well, it looks like we got another caller. Chuck, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I get that genocide is being waged on Black folks in America. I get that there is no justice for Black people or poor people. I am a poor white man. I prefer Caucasian, but my point is that in order for us. And I don't identify with the left. I have to identify as a moderate or in the middle, but not as the status quo defines
okay.
the middle.
So what's your point?
The point is America has been reduced to colonies. We are no longer a nation of independent sovereign states. We are now colonies. We are owned by the British Empire.
No, the U.S. was started as a colony of the British. It's been yeah. a colony ever since the beginning.
The federal constitution.
Oh, no.
Recognize the sovereignty of the individual. That's another thing.
Okay.
If you do not recognize the sovereignty of the individual,
no, the states were colonies. The states were colonies, man.
Advocate for slavery.
The states were colonies. Anyway, we're going to have to let you go. Sorry, but yeah, I mean, if you obviously,
I can respond to the some of the stuff that was raised. The issue, yes, we do say that, you know, that a movement should be led by indigenous and African people, just because, you know, the Black Alliance for Peace is led by African people as an African organization. So we are taking it from this position of African people need to be in the lead. But we definitely say that indigenous people and African people in the United States should be in the lead of the movement in the United States. And the other thing is that the way that BAP deals with this is that the reality is that the movement for liberation in the United States has been decimated, and it is so weak that we have to start with political education. And so BAP has related to itself as it started as an alliance of organizations, and it was meant to be a hub of resources for activists. So we have lots of materials on our website between statements and press releases and newsletters and fact sheets and other pages that are resource pages on different topics or geographic areas. But then, you know, just because of the nature of society in the United States, a lot of people are not in organizations. So you're trying to create an alliance of organizations, and it turns out a lot of people who are joining end up joining as individuals. And a lot of them are very young. 90% of our membership is under the age of 30, and they are individuals. And so how do we address this? The fact that they are very young, this is their first organizational experience. This is what they relate to as their ideological home, the Black Alliance for Peace. So we have to address it through a lot of internal political education. And so that's what we do with our members. It's been a priority for the past couple of years to ensure that our members understand some of the way that we're thinking about things and the way that we're laying things out that they understand internally. So and of course, because we're a grassroots organization, it takes a lot of building up of infrastructure internally and building people up internally so that we can get to the point of making internal political education a thing. And so that's been our role that we see it, is that we are providing political education externally through our materials that you see on our website, and internally for our members who look to the Black Alliance for Peace as an ideological home. And the same for a lot of our non-African Solidarity Network members. They joined in solidarity with the Black Alliance for Peace. A lot of them are individual members, very few organizational members. So that also means that people need to be trained up. And it takes a lot of effort on our part to build up the structure, to build up individuals to initiate things and to take the lead on certain things. And so that's organizational building, and that's what the challenge is right now.
Mm-hmm. So how do people, so are you interested in people to get involved? Are there any Northwest-based organizations that are involved with the Black Alliance for Peace that you know of?
I would not be able to speak to the exact organizations. In terms of like which organizations in the Pacific Northwest, generally speaking, there are not a lot of Black people in the Pacific Northwest, and I think you know that. And so we don't have that many individual members there, nor organizations in the West in general. A lot of our members are based in the U.S. South, and then some people in California, some people in the Northeast, you know, and a lot of people in different cities. You know, if somebody wanted to get involved with the Black Alliance for Peace in the West, we do have people coordinating the West. And it's just that in terms of like, you know, people are always asking us, is BAP in Seattle? Is BAP in Portland? And we don't have an organized group of people. We have citywide alliances throughout the country in cities that have established African populations. So that would mean New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Chicago. And then we have a chapter in Southern California. And then we have a citywide alliance in San Francisco Bay Area. And that's it. But that doesn't mean that nothing could be established. It's just that if people are not showing up, that, you know, we need people to show up. But again, it depends on where the population centers are.
So how does the Black Alliance for Peace relate? Can you possibly give us sort of like an overview of, you know, sort of black activist organizations, networks that you all relate to?
Yeah, we're a part of the Black is Back Coalition, which was started in 2008 with the election of Barack Obama. And every year, the Black is Back Coalition organizes a march on the White House in Washington, D.C. And then they hold online events and in-person events for different kind of reasons. But some of them can be watched on their Facebook page for the Black is Back Coalition. And besides the Black is Back Coalition, you know, some of our member organizations are the All African People's Revolutionary Party, Pan-African Community Action, Friends of the Congo, UJIMA, People's Progress Party in Maryland. We have a BLM, Black Lives Matter chapter in
Boston. Is your phone running down on battery? I hear a beeping.
Oh, no. People are calling me.
Oh, okay.
And then, I mean, we have like 40 organizations, and I don't know them, like all of them, because I'm really separated from like a membership kind of work. So I just know of the member organizations that are very prominent in our discussions. We Charge Colonialism is another one. Yeah, so we have a bunch of member organizations, and they definitely are not. They don't have huge presences, if any at all, in the West Coast, in the Pacific Northwest at least. And we have like a few, we have a few people who are individual members in the San Francisco Bay Area or Los Angeles area. Other organizations that the Black Alliance for Peace is actually affiliated with is we founded the Coalition Against U.S. Foreign Military Bases in 2018, and that is designed to do exactly that, to end the existence of the more than 800 or maybe even 1,000 U.S. military bases around the world. So not only in Africa, but everywhere in the world. And but we specifically took on the project of providing information about what's going on in Africa by providing information about AFRICOM, the U.S. military command in Africa. And so that's why every year we host, we organize a month of action against AFRICOM. And we provide lots of resources on our website for people to do teach-ins or banner drops or different things so that they can educate the public. And so we're really in like a phase of educating the public. You know, somebody mentioned something about, one of the other callers mentioned something about armed revolution. There's no way that you're going to get anything done. I mean, Black Lives Matter doesn't even relate to itself as being strong enough to have an influence on the U.S. Congress. You know, you can have conversations with individual Congress people, you can, you know, do those kinds of things, but they're not going to listen. There's nothing there for us to be doing. So we're trying to build up the masses of people, and we have to first do that via political education. So that's really where we're at.
And again, this is a Wednesday talk radio here on your listener sponsored KBOO Community Radio. I'm Paul Rowland, the weekly host. And I'm speaking with Julie Varughese, who's the co-coordinator of the Solidarity Network of the Black Alliance for Peace, which we've been talking about. And if you're enjoying this conversation, if it's stimulating you, if it's bringing you to places that maybe you hadn't thought about and would like to think more about, please show your support for this program and all your favorite KBOO programs by donating to our special programming campaign this winter membership drive at kboo.fm/give. We are community supported, community focused radio, and bringing you voices from your community and beyond, such as my guest today, talking from us with us from Washington, D.C. We only have a few minutes left. If anybody did want to get on the air to talk to Julie, it's 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. We only have a few minutes left. You know, I did originally build this as a conversation about Ukraine, but I was really interested just to hear more about the Black Alliance for Peace. Why is it important that the Black Alliance for Peace gets involved in, expresses itself on the war in Ukraine?
Yeah, that's a good question. Essentially, we see this as a U.S.-NATO proxy war in Ukraine that saber-rattled Russia. And we see this war that's happening in Ukraine as the third phase of a war that started in 2014. The reason the Black Alliance for Peace is calling it out is because NATO is, says it's North Atlantic Treaty Organization, but it gets involved in all kinds of places that have nothing to do with the North Atlantic Ocean. For example,
looks like we lost Julie. While we're trying to get Julie back, maybe we can go to a caller as soon as my board operator, Ty, gets off the phone with the caller. Sorry, it usually goes really seamlessly, but occasionally we lose our main guest. But let's hear what Elliot has to say. Maybe Ty will try to get Julie back on the line. Go ahead, Elliot.
Well, I just want to emphasize that I think the most important point raised today was about Fred Hampton and the Rainbow Coalition. We're approximately a half a century into a state where the white working class has not had any raise in wages, and the affordability of health care and education and housing and other things for their kids has gone down. The struggle for rights and equality of blacks, Native Americans, as well as other identity groups like, you know, women or gays, two-thirds of a loaf is better, to coin a phrase, two-thirds of a loaf is better than none. And with if you had 67 votes in 67 or 70% of votes in both houses of Congress with a black, white, Indian, etc. coalition, you can write your own ticket, as they did after the Great Depression and after the Kennedy assassination. So we have to bring people together and stop putting out these vibes that everyone in the name of quote-unquote reparations has the absolute right to stand on the faces of a white working class that hasn't had a decent break in over 50 years.
Huh. Well, I don't know. I guess Julie might be back on and might want to respond to that. Are you back, Julie?
I'm sorry. I don't know how that happened.
That's all right.
What I was saying was that the reason the Black Alliance for Peace opposes Ukraine or opposes U.S. intervention and NATO intervention into Ukraine, and we know this because the United States is supplying arms and military services and intelligence and funding to Ukraine to keep this war going. And so the reason the United States, us as the Black Alliance for Peace, opposes the U.S. and NATO proxy war on Ukraine is because NATO is also involved in wars in Africa and around the world, in Afghanistan. And so NATO still conducts exercises, military exercises, with other African militaries regularly in Africa and around the continent. And so it's not, so we have to raise our opposition to the U.S., EU, NATO axis of domination is what we refer to it as, because NATO and the United States are just extensions of the pan-European colonial capitalist project that has been going on since 1492, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we only have about 4 minutes left, and, you know, the question keeps coming up about sort of the legacy of the Soviet Union, you know, and again, we can't really get into this, but I just want to flag it because I think it's really important for people to really have conversations about this. Because, you know, people say that Russia has an imperialist streak, that there's something about Putin's project that smacks of imperialism, you know, that the Soviet Union itself had an expansionist thrust to it. And that, you know, that perhaps there's some legitimate gripes from some of the ex-Soviet satellite states, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's I personally think that's a really important conversation. I think it tends to get a little one-dimensional. My position, and I'll just state this and give you the last thought, and sorry about the callers because we are out of time, but my view is that, you know, as in the belly of the beast, it is our responsibility to address what everything you're talking about, the massive amounts of the projection of U.S. power, especially post-World War II, the havoc that the capitalist, now neoliberal capitalist system has wreaked, that just all this is just, we've got to address that first. And, you know, and in solidarity, perhaps, with people who are opposing, you know, the whatever abuses that Putin is doing himself. But anyway, I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people bring up this point about Russia being an aggressor. And for the Black Alliance for Peace, we say Russia is not the one shooting people down in the streets of the United States. Russia is not the one oppressing Black people in the United States. Russia is not the one oppressing people in Africa. African countries, for the most part, have expressed that they don't want to they're not going to side with the United States and the EU countries in opposition to Russia in this issue about Ukraine. And that's really, you know, and they're not going to allow anybody to tell them which side to choose. And so that's really what it comes down to, is self-determination. African people have the right to determine who their partners are, who they get to partner with, who they oppose, who they reject, and how they proceed moving onward.
Okay. And again, so you're with this Black Alliance for Peace. Is there anything coming up that the people should know about that you all are involved in?
Definitely. March 9th, put that on your calendar. March 9th is the National Day of Action Against Police Terror and Violence. That's being organized by a member organization in Atlanta called Community Movement Builders, but it's going to be a nationwide, U.S.-wide National Day of Action Against Police Terror. And you can check out the, if you go to blackallianceforpeace.com/events, you can check out the information about that National Day of Action Against Police Violence. And then on March 18th, we are going to be participating as one of 100 or more organizations in the march and protest in Washington, D.C. against the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. So it's very important that people come out.
Okay,
so we can get a ride.
We got to go. Thank you very much, okay. Julia Varghese. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM. And K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
KBOO Portland. You're listening to All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2, KBOO's special programming campaign. Check out all the special programs we're bringing you in February and March at kboo.fm